Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, coming to you from New York City. Da, 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 da. It is draw day for the US Open 2023, or Matt Roberts, should I say, day on which 256 names were deposited on the internet.
Because, all at the same time.
Because who knows if there was a draw? Is there? There's no actual evidence that a draw took place. There is just names on the internet.
Refreshing.
We have studied.
Yep. I was sitting in the same room that we're in now to record this podcast in my sweats.
which isn't how you want to enjoy a draw. You
no, like I want to put on my best shirt.
He saves his best outfit. You didn't even bring a shirt to this tournament because there's no draw.
Absolutely. I want to dress up. I want there to be a show and spectacle. And I want for us all to be excited about the draw, which tells us so much about what the next 2 weeks will look like. And instead, we were just refreshing an internet page. And then, suddenly, there's no time to like process the draw as it comes out one name by one name. You know, that's the beauty of a draw, the tension and the drama and the build up and savoring every little matchup that comes out. Suddenly it's just 256 names in front of you, and it's very difficult to process and take it all in. Just a diminished experience.
It was a tense time at Tennis Podcast Towers. Tennis Podcast Towers, New York edition. It's the first time we've officially had a Tennis Podcast Towers New York edition.
Yeah.
We're completing the career slam of those, I think, aren't we?
I'm quite proud.
At the time of the not draw, David Law was on a plane. You're no longer on a plane. David, my laptop hasn't adjusted to US time. It's still on UK time. And it tells me that the time that your body clock probably still thinks it is 3:18 a.m.
Oh, that's why I feel like this.
Having been up since 4:30 a.m.
Yeah. It's 23 hours and some minutes, isn't it? And it kind of feels like that. I feel all right, considering, I have to say.
All right, considering.
Yeah.
The David Law mantra. you're actually sort of the buzziest of the three of us, quite possibly.
Check me out.
Check him out, folks. Check us out. We are in New York City. We have a draw to discuss. We have media day to go to tomorrow. We have tennis to watch. There's going to be a bumper crop of qualifying matches on tomorrow because a lot were rained off today because David Law brought Solihull with him to the United States. Matt and I have been here for 2 days soaking up the sun. It's been delightful.
I've been watching on blummin' Instagram how nice it's been. It's been horrific today since my arrival. Hopefully better to come. But yeah, the plus side is always you get the bumper crop of matches the next day after they've all been rained off.
Although it is scheduled to rain tomorrow as well. But
Saturday
is going to be good, folks. Matt and I will be en route to a different state.
I'll keep you posted.
Let us know. Yeah, I'd rather not do that drive in the rain, actually. Mm. Anyway, more on our Saturday plans in tomorrow's show. We, of course, have two US Open preview shows coming for you, this one, and we'll have a show for you tomorrow after Media Day when we'll have spoken to all the players, grilled them, got their feelings about the US Open balls. Always a hot topic of conversation. Media Day in New York.
I wonder if any of them have got a draw view, generally, on their favourite types of draw.
They'll all be like, I don't look at the draw.
Yeah. They will have tiresome answers to that. That's not a road we want to go down. No, let's focus on our own views of the draw. And in fact, we have more than the draw to digest, because we, just moments before recording, it dropped that we now know who will play Monday and Tuesday, how the draw will be divided across the days. And on Monday, we'll have the top half of the women's draw and the bottom half of the men's, which means we'll kick off on Monday with Iga Swiatek, Novak Djokovic, Coco Gauff, Francis Tiafoe. I would expect those maybe to be the Arthur Ashe matches. There'll also be Elena Rybakina, Holger Rune, Casper Ruud, Stefanos Tsitsipas. They'll all play on Monday. And then Tuesday will be the bottom half of the women's draw and the top half of the men's. So that'll be Carlos Alcaraz, Aryna Sabalenka, Jannik Sinner, Daniil Medvedev and Jessica Pegula all in action on Tuesday. So you can probably deduce from the names that I have read out there that Swiatek, Gauff, Rybakina have fallen in the same half of the draw, and in the other half of the women's draw, Sabalenka, Pegula, other significant names in the bottom half of the women's draw, Matt?
Ons Jabeur and Marketa Vondroušová. Two very significant names.
Vondroušová.
What are we going to do
with Marketa Vondroušová? It's funny how massive a change there's been in the space of less than a week to how I feel about Coco Gauff coming out in Iga Swiatek's quarter.
Mm. Yeah, like literally 10 days ago, I would have seen that. And this is the fourth slam in a row where Iga Swiatek and Coco Gauff have been in the same quarter. Every single slam this year, it has happened. And at the previous three, I've been like, oh, I've been annoyed. Like I didn't want to see that match up because it was so one-sided, and now genuine excitement, and I want to see that match because of what Coco Gauff displayed in Cincinnati and how she was able to win that match. I really want to see it, and I think Swiatek has got a great path to be able to get to that match in the quarterfinal. Most likely, Yelena Ostapenko would be her biggest obstacle, but who knows what Ostapenko is going to show up. I feel pretty confident that Swiatek will get to that quarterfinal. Gauff's got a maybe slightly harder route with a very exciting potential round two with Mira Andreeva.
I remember us watching that first set. I remember going up to the Suzanne Longlen steps when you have to wait for the changeover in order to come in and get the best seats in tennis. And it went on forever because they were just duking out a first set that Andreeva ended up winning, didn't she, on the tiebreak? But Coco Gauff said afterwards, even though I lost the set, I felt like I won it.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah. And that was the most childish we've ever seen the actual child Mira Andreeva B. She suddenly transformed into a sullen teenager in the latter stages of that match, didn't she?
Yeah, but I mean, as you know, Gauff obviously managed to win that match, and I think she's playing a lot better tennis now a few months on. So Gauff would be, I think, a considerable favourite. So, you know, let's get excited about the potential for Swiatek Gauff in the quarterfinal.
We've watched quite a lot of tennis coverage in the last 48 hours, David, since we've been out here. We've been watching Tennis in the Land and Tennis in Winston-Salem and we have been watching US Open qualifying. ESPN have been covering that, and today the ESPN studio interviewed Coco Gauff while she was practicing. She was on the practice court behind them. They were in their sort of second studio set, that sort of loungy sort of salon type set, or salon, don't know why I said it like that, overlooking the practice courts just in the lead. You've got Arthur Ashe Stadium looming in the distance. And there she was on the practice court with Brad Gilbert stalking around, and she's got an AirPod in, and she's just having a chit-chat. And she could not have seemed happier with life. It was
a good idea.
It was brilliant.
That. It's a good idea, especially in these few days when still a few days out from the tournament, and you can get some proper insight. I remember Wimbledon did some stuff like that with Andy Murray and Tim Henman, didn't they? And we've seen it increasingly in golf, actually, during rounds, where a player will hit a shot and then be walking down the fairway having a chat with the commentators, which I really enjoy that insight personally. But I didn't see this coverage, but Coco Gauff's the sort of player you
absolutely
want, isn't she?
Yeah, it was really good. It's exactly the kind of access you want to see. And yeah, as you say, she ain't going to be doing that the morning before a match, or probably at all once the tournament starts, maybe in the earlier stages. But yeah, this is the time to do that. I actually also think it's quite significant for Coco Gauff that she's not in Jessica Pegula's half. I think that's a really tough matchup for her, and continues to be. I mean, Jessica Pegula is the only player she's lost to since her transformation post Wimbledon, and that was quite an anomalous poor performance from Coco Gauff. It was very windy. It was very challenging conditions, but no doubt she was diminished that day by the weirdness and awkwardness of her relationship with Jessica Pegula. I don't think Jessica Pegula loved it either, but she coped with it the better of the two.
Yeah, yeah. There's such a clear sort of edge that Coco Gauff needs to have, like when she plays Iga Świątek, given the lopsided head-to-head. She's so focused on what it is she has to do, and just there's sort of extraneous stuff when she plays Jessica Pegula, and it was a bit uncomfortable. I mean, there are other names in the Coco Gauff section.
I don't like that draw for her,
right?
Very
I mean,
much.
Danielle just, Collins yeah, is in there. That's
third round.
Yeah, though. That's potentially very
this
tricky.
This is Gauff's draw we're talking
this
about.
This is Gauff's
here.
Draw.
Yeah.
There's also potentially Petra Kvitova in the fourth round. Again, kind of a bit like Ostapenko. You don't really know which Petra Kvitova could show up, but it could be a great one.
She could come out and just pop the balloon, couldn't she? She's, you know, if she just had a good day.
And she's got a qualifier in the first round, Coco Gauff, so we don't know who that will be. But, you know it will be someone who's won three matches. And
could be Diana Ostremska.
Shall we talk about that?
Go on then.
So, Agrotastic.
Yes. She faced and beat Eugenie Bouchard today in three sets. And of course, Agrotastic, because Eugenie Bouchard tweeted about Diana Jastremska earlier in the year when she beat her in Madrid.
A subsequently deleted tweet.
A deleted tweet followed
and
up by an apology.
Issued a definitely run by several lawyers apology.
Yes. And there was no handshake at the end of this match. There was a death stare from Diana Jastremska. And yeah, that was kind of the event of qualifying.
She
today.
Really meant that celebration at the end, didn't she?
Yeah.
I'm just remembering, by the way, that Coco Gauff lost to Yelena Ostapenko in Australia this year. I mean, I do.
Yeah, although Ostapenko is in the Świątek.
Right, so she. Right.
So, I mean, she
to
could.
To face Ostapenko, it would mean not facing Świątek.
Yeah,
sure.
But I do think the Ostapenko and Kvitova parallel as an opponent is quite. Is one that really. Is the one I'd be concerned about from a Coco Gauff perspective. Suddenly, this player can just turn it on, and all your dreams are up in smoke because it's best of three sets and you don't have time. That's the...
Yeah. Świątek and Rybakina in the same half. I don't... I don't know what to do with Rybakina. She is not right at all. But I distinctly remember quite a recent Grand Slam where she was absolutely not right going in. And I didn't include her in my predictions at all. And, okay, she didn't go on to win the thing. And she did come up short against Ons Jabeur. But she was a threat.
Yeah.
She was a factor. She's such a good player that even depleted, she can be a factor.
Yeah, because she can win matches without expending too much when she's really on. But I do think that there are problems there, both physically and this serve that we've been looking at that looks a little bit different. Whether it's related or not, I don't know, but which is leaking double faults all over the place and which is getting broken an uncharacteristic amount of times. If she hasn't sorted that out, she's not going to win this title, I don't think. So I'm not convinced by Rybakina at this tournament. And usually I am so convinced by her.
Yeah, it's a shame because I'm really fascinated by the Świątek Rybakina matchup. The fact that even at Świątek's best, she has such a problem with Elena Rybakina. I find that fascinating because one of the very best things about tennis is matchups.
Yeah.
That it's not just about how good you are and how well you play. It's about how your game matches up against someone down the other end. And world number ones just having, or you know, or amazing players having bogey players is fascinating to me. And I just want to see that matchup with them both at their peaks more and more. And although they're in the same half, it still somehow feels quite unlikely that that will end up happening. Although I did start the segment by saying I wouldn't make the same mistake that I made at Wimbledon, but it would be a semi-final meeting, wouldn't it? So
yeah, and the Rybakina's quarter, let's call it that, so the bottom quarter of the top half is pretty open, I think, because the other sort of big seed in there is Maria Sakkari, who
this looks like the section
I don't trust.
I can't remember which bit of tennis coverage, which channel, which tournament we were watching earlier, but they popped up. They were running through the draw, and they popped up this section, and we looked through it and went, that could end up being chaos. That's the bit where some random names could end up in plum positions.
There are names which jump out. I think the main one here is probably Karolina Muchová. Obviously, you know, had a great run recently, has the French Open experience, really has Maria Sakkari's number, and they could meet in the fourth round. So I'd be looking to her, but there's just, you know, there's always a question mark with Muchová over her fitness. We saw her clutching her ab in Cincinnati and playing with strapping on. There's Victoria Azarenka in this section.
Hers was the name that jumped out at me when we looked at it.
Mm.
Because form doesn't seem to mean anything with Sabalenka, with Azarenka. The fact that she's not really done anything in the lead-up events doesn't really make me discount her in any way. I still feel like she can just pop up and make herself relevant.
Yeah, I agree. And the other name I would point to here would probably be Beatrice Adad-Meier, who is tough. But, you know, she has...
David knows.
She has Sloane Stephens in the first round. What do you do with that?
Great first round draw, yeah. That, isn't it?
Sloane Stephens, who she played twice today in the land, otherwise known as Cleveland. And I just saw an Instagram post from her after her first match of the day. She beat Mira Andreeva, and it was, the caption was, building momentum. And unfortunately, she had to play again later on that day, and that post did not age brilliantly well. But yeah, still, it's still the US Open. It's still Arthur Ashe Stadium, most likely, and she's still a former champion. Who on earth knows? Any other names or first round matchups, Matt, from the top half of the women's draw that you would like to draw attention to?
Well, I do think Rybakina's first round is interesting. Marta Kostyuk, again, a player who always seems to get tough draws. I don't know whether that is actually backed up, but in my mind she always gets tough draws. And if Rybakina isn't quite right, that one would certainly stand out to me as a great great first round. There's also Jenny Brady in that top half, who is just someone I'm interested in at the moment. She was so good in her first few matches of her comeback. Like, she feels like she's a dark horse maybe in this draw. Like, I don't think she's ready to go on and win it. Not absolutely not saying that, but given the tennis she displayed just a week or so ago, like, she feels primed that she could take someone out and go on a bit of a run. So I'll be looking to her. Caroline Wozniacki as well is also very close to Jennifer Brady in this draw.
Who does Wozniacki have round one?
She has a qualifier. Okay. But then potentially Petra Kvitova in the second round. So lots and lots of intrigue in this top half.
Should we go by day? Should we deal with the bottom half of the men's draw before moving on to...
Wow.
Is that two row?
Matt's the draw person.
Do I have permission?
Yes, you have permission. It wouldn't be the worst draw-related thing that's happened today.
Okay, so Novak Djokovic, second seed, was destined for the very bottom of the draw, as the second seed always is. And it's a good draw, isn't it, Matt? It is a good draw.
It is a pretty much dream draw. I mean, I say that, we were talking about this earlier, and David made the very good point, I think, that we thought the same at Wimbledon, and maybe there was some kind of opinion that he was perhaps a little bit undercooked, Djokovic, going into that final with Carlos Alcaraz. And maybe if he'd been tested a little bit more along the way, who knows, that might have ended up helping him. But off the back of that grueling Cincinnati final, I think Djokovic will be very pleased with his draw here in terms of an ability to pretty much coast, I think, through several rounds. I mean, he's got Alexandra Muller in the first round to face either Zapata Miralles or Ethan Quinn in the second round. Laszlo Gera is his first potential seed. Look, I just think this is an absolute dream draw for Novak Djokovic in the early stages, and even in the latter stages, because Jannik Sinner and particularly Daniil Medvedev came out in the other side of the draw. I was looking at Medvedev as the biggest threat to Djokovic other than Alcaraz in this tournament, and he's now in a situation where he can only play one of Alcaraz and Medvedev in this tournament, and that would be in the final. I think Holger Rune is in his half, and we know that he has a head-to-head lead over Novak Djokovic. He's displayed an ability to adapt to that matchup in a way that others haven't, but I don't know. Holger Rune would need to reach the semi-finals to meet Novak Djokovic, and he has lost every match he's played since Wimbledon and doesn't seem fit. And
is it still the wrist that's troubling him?
No, it was the back the other day. It was the back the other day. So Taylor Fritz or Stefanos Tsitsipas are potential quarterfinal opponents. Look, they've got pedigree, but I just think this is pretty perfect for Novak Djokovic.
Do you know there are 8 qualifiers in the quarter of the draw in which Djokovic sits? I mean, he's not due to necessarily meet any of them, not in the first 2 rounds. There are a couple of qualifiers in that third round section, but it's just they're all shoved together in that bottom half of the draw. I mean, the most interesting draw that I'm looking at is Stefanos Tsitsipas against Milos Raonic.
Stefanos Tsitsipas, because who has never won a set against
he
Milos
does
Raonic.
Not like that. I know this is not Milos Raonic of 2016, but Tsitsipas is not happy about that draw, for sure.
I think it's a really tough draw for Tsitsipas. As you said, Raonic first, never won a set against him. Big server, can pick on some of the Tsitsipas weaknesses on return. Then he's potentially got Alexei Popperin, who's been playing great tennis this summer. And then, if he gets through that, he's potentially got a Wimbledon rematch with Christopher Eubanks.
Oh, yes, please.
In the third round. Now, I think Eubanks would be doing pretty well on current form to get to that third round, but...
What, you're saying you don't think he can beat Benjamin Bonzi and Quentin Alice, who are both potential second-round opponents?
I mean, like, 6 months ago, we really would have thought maybe not for Christopher Eubanks. Like, it's tough to... It's tough to adjust your expectations.
3 months ago, yes.
It hasn't gone that well recently.
Right. Has he fundamentally changed as a tennis player, or was he just in really good form for 6 months and flourishing on the grass, which is a surface?
A middling American having
game.
A good run, not during a pandemic. Who knows?
Possible.
And I think we're all expecting him to come alive under the New York lights, and
yeah.
I hope so. But I'd love to see Tsitsipas Eubanks again. That was a great match at Wimbledon.
I do think Philippoussis comes into his own in a match against Raonic, because in practice he can replicate what Raonic will do to a T, I think, with his own game. I mean, I don't know how creaky the limbs are these days for Mark.
Raonic's limbs are pretty creaky.
I want to see Raonic against Philippoussis.
Well, Philippoussis is playing I saw on Instagram earlier, he's due to play a Champions Tour event in Scotland.
Oh, how nice.
Next month, yeah. So, possibly less creaky limbs than Milos Raonic. I think he's going to need Philippoussis. I think that's really tough for Tsitsipas.
Especially given he has no record of doing well in New York, really, anyway.
6-love, 5-love to Daniel Galan here last year.
That
never
is not
forget.
Leaving your mind, is it, that one? That was extraordinary.
It's definitely not leaving Stefanos Tsitsipas' mind.
I genuinely looked at the screen thinking there was a glitch.
It was malfunctioning.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at it for the first time at 6-love, 5-love.
Because Serena
because I
was
watching
playing.
Serena. It wasn't. I didn't even see it be 3-love. Or see it even be 6-love.
I was like
it
going
was 6-love, 5-love.
I was going up closer to the screen to just see. Am I? Is that a zero? That's not. That is.
Casper Ruud is in the bottom half of the draw finalist here last year. What's his run or potential run like?
A little bit tricky, I would say. I mean, he opens against a qualifier, so we don't know who that will be yet. But then in the second round, JJ Wolf or Zhijian Zhang, who is a good player.
He is a good player. I rate him.
And then potentially Sebastian Korda in the third round, who has just pulled out of Winston-Salem.
With a fake injury.
Through injury.
Fine. I support it. I think it should. You shouldn't have to lie.
Yeah. I mean, he did fall, didn't he, in his match against Richard Gasquet. Was that towards the end of that match? He got through it. Like, maybe that's a convenient thing to then be able to lean on.
If you're Richard Gasquet, who had match points in that match, you're pissed off, aren't you? Anyway.
Yeah, because I don't think Richard Gasquet is pulling out to preserve his chances in the US Open. Mm. No.
But look, if Korda is doing that, then, you know, sometimes, trying to beat Casper Ruud in round 3 feels a bit like the sort of moment that he kind of needs again.
Because it hasn't been happening for him, really, has it? I mean, sometimes they just have a bit of a twinge that they panic about, or they become ultra-conservative over. when it's the week before, which is always the problem with entering these things the week before. I mean, it's and these tournaments can sometimes really get stuffed. And I'm not, I don't know. Look, Seb Korda may be really badly injured for all I know, but we know that happens. I mean, and it is just a bummer, really, for those tournaments a lot of the time.
It's really difficult. Rude is actually really tricky because although I think generally speaking, in our minds, we think of him as Mr. Consistent, or certainly did last year. Actually, the Grand Slam finals that he's reached, he didn't have great results in the lead up events to those Grand Slams.
Right. And he hadn't done well at the previous Slam. Like, he's got this round two final, round two final, round two. Like, he's got a pattern.
Yeah.
And if he follows the pattern, he'll be reaching the final again of this one. He's a bit of a juxtaposition, isn't he? Because, you know, the joke about him has been Mr. Clay Court 250. And yes, he has been very good at Clay Court 250s, but he's also been very good at slams. You know, he's reached three slam finals, which is, you know, more than pretty much any of his sort of next-gen contemporaries can say. So yeah, I agree. He is a tricky one to be able to make a prediction for. But I think he's earned respect, really, that we should be considering him certainly as a potential semi-final opponent for Novak Djokovic. I wouldn't predict him or think he would get past Djokovic, but sure, he could get past Korda and Tiafoe and Runa, who are all in his quarter.
What's Tiafoe's draw like? Is the party bus going to be back in town?
I think it is. You know, I think it's pretty good up until that potential fourth round with Casper Ruud.
You don't get a party bus for a round three win. He had to beat Nadal last year. He had to inflict Nadal's first Grand Slam defeat of the year to hail the party bus.
Adrian Manarino's lurking.
Oh, God.
Third round. Yeah. And then winner of that to face either Ruud or Korda, most likely.
Yeah.
Where? How far do we think Tiafoe's going? Put you on the spot about Tiafoe, because we've discussed his sort of slightly disappointing summer hard court swing, but we always stop ourselves short of being disappointed because we say we'll judge him by the US Open. So what do we think?
I've just said things that I truly believe about Casper Ruud, and yet I'm probably going to end up putting Francis Tiafoe through that section.
Second round defeat for Casper Ruud it is then, in Matt's predictions.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or your smart TV, both in HD. Matt, this sounds like your kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere, dipping in to where there's the latest final set tiebreak or even the latest bit of aggro.
And David, don't worry, you can just watch your favourite court, Suzanne Longlen, all day if you want. But whatever you choose, the French Open promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history.
Do you know, I think in a lot of ways, the French Open is now my favourite slam. It's the strategy of the clay court tennis, the way it challenges players, and particularly now with legends of the game up against a new generation of young players. I cannot wait.
Be there when it happens, with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Subscribe to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TENNISPOD20 for 20% off your annual subscription. Let's move on to the Tuesday matches. These will be Tuesday and Thursday and Saturday, and you get where I'm going with this. So it'll be the bottom half of the women's draw and the top half of the men's. So in terms of the women's, this is where we see Sabalenka and Pegula and Vondroušová.
Mm.
How's Vondroušová's draw?
Does it matter?
And does it matter? Yeah, is the second part of
it. I mean, honestly, I think...
She starts with a qualifier.
I think pretty good, really. She's in a little section of the draw where there's a potential Leila Fernandez, Bianca Andreescu round two.
I can't believe Andreescu's going to play. I don't want her to play.
Given the fact that she's got a stress fracture in her back.
You can't cheat healing that.
Yeah. But I mean,
just seeing it on paper, you know, it just pops out of the draw, doesn't it? Andreescu Fernandez.
No.
Yeah.
Imagine if somebody told you, like, 18 months ago, that could be a match.
I've seen Bianca Andreescu limp off court or be wheeled off court too many times.
Yeah.
Already.
What I think I find most interesting about that top quarter of that bottom half is the fact that we could be on for a Wimbledon quarterfinal repeat, which would be Jessica Pegula against Marketa Vondroušová.
A match which a lot of people think Pegula ought to have won.
Right, and I would love to see that match again because I think, you know, kind of Coco Gauff aside, Jessica Pegula has been the in-form player. I think she's got a potentially tricky first-round match against Camilla Giorgi because Giorgi can blow so hot and cold. But Pegula has played Giorgi a lot and generally handled her pretty successfully. And I just trust Pegula to make the progress that she always seems to make and reach her seeding and or certainly reach that quarterfinal. And if it's Marketa Vondroušová there, you've then got this whole element of can Pegula get past the quarterfinal stage for the first time? Oh, and she's doing it against the player who she had the best chance of beating in her most recent quarterfinal. So there'd be a lot going on in that potential quarterfinal.
It's her least successful slam, Vondroušová, this one. Now, I know obviously that is meaningless because she'd only ever won one Wimbledon main draw match prior to this year and winning the title. But I do just wonder whether she is one of those characters that New York and the US Open just doesn't suit. And that doesn't count her out because the same was the case of Iga Świątek last year. But Iga Świątek's the best tennis player in the world. I just wonder, we'll get to ask her tomorrow, perhaps.
I also wonder whether the surface, the balls suit her. I was watching the other day when she played Świątek, I think, and it was a tiebreak first set. And there was just a moment or two where I saw Vondroušová go for the drop shot and the ball just doesn't die in the same way that it does on a clay or a grass court.
That was at Cincinnati, wasn't it? I think think that might have been court as well as ball. I don't know. Apparently, some people are saying the court / ball / interaction thereof is playing a bit differently in New York this year to last year, which I hope isn't true, because I really feel like the conditions here the past few years have been perfect. Like, it's just ideal, quick hard courts, really.
Yeah, suggestion is it's a bit
slower. I hope that's not true, but we'll see. Well, I say we'll see, but actually I think I'm a terrible judge court speed.
Who would that really favour in a women's draw? A slower court. And that's something, you know, maybe that might favour Vondrosova. And obviously Świątek, I suppose, being a French Open champion 3 times.
What do we think about Sabalenka?
So many things.
starting with
the fact that, again, with Sabalenka, it all just feels like it hinges on the semi-final.
Who would her scheduled semi-final opponent be? Pegula?
Pegula or Vondrosova? I mean, she would have to get through Ons Jabeur potentially in the quarterfinals. I think she's come out of this draw pretty well, Arina Sabalenka, on the whole, I would say. Donna Vekic is lurking there as a potential fourth round opponent. I don't really see too many threats for Sabalenka before that. But Vekic or Kasatkina potentially in the fourth round. Sofia Kenin is in there as well. But Sabalenka has shown herself to be really consistent in slams now this year. So I do trust her to get through those matches, but really inconsistent in semifinals from game to game, let alone semifinal to semifinal. So I just don't trust her in semifinals. There's too much baggage there now for me to confidently predict that she can make this final. And yet I think she probably should, given how good she can be and given this draw.
Speaking of baggage, how's Ons Jabeur's draw?
She starts against Camila Osorio, which could be fun. She's then potentially got Madison Brengel, which could be fun.
I was going to say, I really kind of want to see that, and I wouldn't mind seeing Ons Jabeur against Tatiana Maria again, like we saw at Wimbledon that time when she pulled her Maria out into the court and got the crowd to give her a round of applause.
Mm. I think Jabeur's got a pretty good draw. I think Jabeur Sabalenka quarterfinal feels very on from this draw. Zheng Qin Wen is a potential fourth round for Ons Jabeur.
I'm developing doubts about Zheng Qin Wen.
The forehand was alarmingly
bad. It was alarming. The forehand and the serve is very effective, but boy, there's an awful lot that can go wrong there. It's not a compact technique.
And she was talking in her press conference during Cincinnati about the fact that she'd developed a kind of like a nervous tic on the serve. And she said it's there in some matches and not there in some matches. It didn't sound...
That's a problem, isn't it?
Didn't sound good.
That's not good. Okay. Top half of the men's draw on Tuesday, Carlos Alcaraz.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about both draws is that the number one seed landed in the same quarter as the number six seed, and those were the matches and the matchups that I was most interested in. In the women's draw, it was Świątek and Goff, and in the men's draw, it was Alcaraz and Sinner. And, Sinner is the sixth seed. He is in the same quarter as Carlos Alcaraz, and that, to me, is absolutely fascinating, because that's the most exciting rivalry in men's tennis other than Alcaraz and Djokovic right now, I would say. The fact that they've played some all-time classics, that every time they meet, there just seems to be something extraordinary seems to happen in terms of an incredible rally or just general electricity and excitement and energy. And Sinner has shown himself to be able to beat Alcaraz in a way that other players have not. I think Alcaraz has got a very good draw in terms of getting to that quarterfinal with Sinner.
Hold on a minute.
I think Sinner's is harder.
Dan Evans, round three. Artifice, round four.
I mean, I'm not going to back down from anything I just said.
I'm just putting Artifice in the fourth round there. Got Talon Greeks four in the first round.
Don't think he's winning that.
No, probably a bit early for him.
Are we going to get Alcaraz Sinner? And if we do, will Sinner get as close as he did 12 months ago?
I mean, Sinner has got as potential obstacles Stan Wawrinka, who has been playing well recently, Andy Murray, Alexander Zverev. Like, they're all lurking in his section before Carlos Alcaraz. So there are tests there.
I think we will get that match. And I think it will be close, but it won't be as close as last time.
I think I agree with David.
Mm.
Andy Murray, Corentin Moutet. Is that right?
There was a moment where I thought he was playing Constant Lestienne. Because
Matt's eyes bugged out of his head.
Because their names are next to each other in the draw. It goes Constant Lestienne, Andy Murray, Corentin Moutet.
It's still fun, though. It's Murray Moutet.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear David Law commentary on that.
Winner to face Dimitrov.
Well, I mean, if Dimitrov wins his opener.
He's looking quite good.
Daniil Medvedev, folks.
Yeah.
That was
the other big element of the men's draw.
A couple of things here. He's in Alcaraz's quarter, and I think...
No, he's in Alcaraz's half.
Half, okay. For me, I think that's curtains for him in terms of winning the tournament. I really do think that matchup issue is critical for him. I think it's a bit of a catastrophe, actually, at the moment. The extent to which his game just does not work against Carlos Alcaraz.
And the thing is, by the time... If you get to the semis, you know Alcaraz is dialed, don't you?
I mean, let's say Medvedev makes it to the semis and he's waiting for the winner of Alcaraz Sinner. That is feast or famine for him, because he's got this dream matchup with Jannik Sinner. Can do no wrong against him.
What a little triangle of players they
are.
Yeah,
it's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. But it's very much famine for him against Carlos Alcaraz. But question marks over Medvedev even reaching that semi?
Yeah, I think so, based on, his current form. His Grand Slam record this year hasn't been fantastic. And I got some tricky little matches, I would say. I never would have thought I would be saying that the winner of the sensation off between Max Purcell and Christopher O'Connell. But if it's Max Purcell, like, he's been playing really well recently. That would be a slightly tricky round two, I would say.
Yeah, I just think Medvedev might quite like his game.
Max Purcell coming at him. Yeah. He can... I agree, but... Just one to circle.
Oh, Dimonor's in that.
Right. Dimonor, potential round four, who just beat him the other week in Canada.
That's not
and
great.
Then Hubert Hurkacz, a potential quarterfinal. Hurkacz has got a winning record against Medvedev.
Medvedev does not like playing Hubert Hurkacz.
Yeah. I think there are real obstacles for Medvedev before we even think about a semi final.
Very interested in his media day tomorrow, just try and get a sense of where he's at mentally.
Yeah. Rublev's got a terrible draw. It's the first...
He's got Djokovic round one. Well,
it's the first time this year he's avoided being in Djokovic's quarter.
Okay, I mean, that's a big win.
But then he's been given Rusevori in the first round, who he just lost to the other week. And if he gets through that, he might have Gael Monfils, who's rolling back the years.
And if he gets who's Gael Monfils got round one?
Qualifier.
Could we have a little Gael Monfils run?
That'd be good.
Yeah.
Well, Andre Rublev doesn't want that. But
neither does Matt Roberts, because that would mean Nicholas Jarry's under threat.
Well, I showed great restraint not to put Nicholas Jarry in the tricky draw for Daniil Medvedev section.
I thought Matt was going to say in the mix.
Oh, Matt and I had a little spat earlier about who was better out of Francisco Cerúndolo and Nicholas Jarry, and you were going to check the rankings. I'm sure.
I think Cerúndolo's ranked higher.
Cerúndolo's better.
Right. But so Cerúndolo's better.
So we always take the rankings, do we? As fact?
Yes, that's what numbers are like.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, in this instance.
Okay. I think Nicholas Jarry's better than Francisco Cerúndolo.
What's their head to head?
Who could say?
Google!
talk amongst yourselves, folks.
Oh.
Matt was annoyed that, maybe he was annoyed, that Francisco Cerúndolo made the World Laver Cup team, but Nicholas Jarry did not get the call-up. They played...
Didn't he play in it, though, in its inaugural year?
Yeah, he was the alternate.
He was the alternate.
I'd say that's some early Nicholas Jarry, isn't it?
I think it was Nicholas Jarry and Jeremy Shardy were the alternates.
They've only ever played once. It was a challenger in Concepcion in Chile.
Oh. Mm. Home turf for Nicholas Jarry.
Home turf for Nicholas Jarry, and he still didn't win.
When was that?
2021.
He's a different player now.
How lopsided?
A 7-5 in the third.
Oh, tight. I mean, I do think they're very similar.
Have they been seen in the same room?
It doesn't say what their respective rankings are at the moment, but I'd say Cerúndolo's had a more meteoric rise.
Yeah.
Jarry's been kicking around for ages.
We had a ban, Jarry.
Right. I mean, that's on him.
Yeah. I would say Cerúndolo is slightly higher ranked, but they're both in the 20s, I reckon.
Cerúndolo's 20, Jarry's 24.
There we go.
Case closed. Okay.
I need to bookmark this conversation.
Any more...
Whoever's ranked higher is better. That was what you just said.
In this, to settle this debate. Yeah.
Because it suits us.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just enjoying how weird you get about Nicholas Jarry.
Yeah. I can't deny I do. Also, he let me down. I don't know why I'm defending him so much.
He
pushed Alcaraz at Wimbledon. It was a good match.
Move on, Matt.
He prepared him for what came.
He hardened him for Djokovic.
Right, any more draw-related submissions?
If Jarry goes on a run, I'm going to buy some of that stuff that he wears on his nose to help his breathing.
I'm delirious on jet lag. You've got no excuse.
No one knows about what Nicholas Jarry's wearing on his nose, Matt.
They do.
That's not a reference.
People who listen
people
to this
understand.
Podcast will get that.
I had no idea he'd got anything. Oh. And I'm on the podcast.
We're trying to have a broad appeal here, guys. any other draw-related submissions?
I'm scared to speak now.
We have a couple of other bits of tennis news that have dropped in the last 48 hours. The impending retirement of John Isner. This is to be his last tournament.
Mm.
Any thoughts about that? Just,
I mean,
that you don't have to have any.
I mean, the thing is with John Isner, like, he is probably one of the most influential players in a way in the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years in terms of the actual sort of material effect that it feels like he's had on the sport. Like, would we have deciding set tiebreaks in all Grand Slams without John Isner? Like, I think the sport was going that way, and eventually they would have got there. But I do think some of his extreme matches, you know, 70-68 against Mahou and the very long semi-final against Kevin Anderson at Wimbledon, I think they sort of sped that process up. I think tennis looks the way it does now, for better or worse. That is probably, you know, people will feel differently about it, partly because of John Isner. And he's also been the number one player in America for a long time. And that's a big deal, you know. He didn't reach the heights that former American number ones have reached, but he was always there. And he was probably better than he got credit for, I suppose. I think people would always just think of his serve, but he was more than that.
Big names didn't fancy playing him, you know. I mean, he didn't he win a set against Nadal at the French Open one time?
He was two sets up.
Yeah. And I think he beat Andy Roddick here at the US Open the year that Roddick had just made the final of Wimbledon, that incredible final against Roger Federer. I remember commentating on Isner knocking out Roddick. And, yeah, if he'd get on a roll with that serve, it was just, you know, he couldn't break, but you couldn't break him. It was a blooming nightmare.
Most aces in tennis history.
So good luck to John Isner in retirement. Don't go to the pickleball dark side, John.
Yeah.
It's my advice
to
you.
He will, though, won't he?
The future of the Cincinnati tournament is in doubt. Coco Gauff, in her on-court speech, complimented the tournament on a facilities upgrade that the event had received over the past 12 months, but she also alluded to some uncertainty over its future in terms of its location. Rumours have been swirling about this for a long time, David.
Yeah, it really obviously ended up becoming something talked about a lot over the last week because of the event being held there. But yeah, the billionaire Ben Navarro, who's the father to the tennis pro Emma Navarro, and he also owns the Charleston event, the WTA event. He bought the rights to the Western and Southern Open from the USTA last year. And he's got a company called BMAC Capital, which announced plans to build a tennis and pickleball complex on 50 acres in Charlotte in North Carolina. And so inevitably, immediately, people are thinking, well, if you bought that, is that designed to go and move the tournament over there? And obviously, it's going to extend to 2 weeks, a 96 draw in a couple of years' time, the Cincinnati tournament. But, you know, there's no knowing at this point whether it's going to move or not. They're certainly not denying that its future is up in the air a little bit. I mean, and it's been in Ohio for more than 100 years, this tournament. The Forbes reported last month that nothing is official at the moment, but a spokesperson for BMAC Capital said that the tournament has an incredible history. We're making major investments in it to enhance the experience for players and fans. But it says, we're excited to host the tournament in Greater Cincinnati for years to come, and expect to make a decision on the long-term home of the tournament later this summer. I mean, the people I did ask a couple of people last week who I suspected may know rather more than I do, and the feeling was amongst them that it is going to move eventually. You know, it might take a little while. There's stuff to work out. And I know Cincinnati is trying to kind of create a rival proposal for expansion of its own site, but it's not easy because, you know, there's a golf course, I think, on one side, and, you know, there's not that far you can go into.
Fantastic theme park on another side.
Exactly. But the feeling is that it probably will end up going to Charlotte.
Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah.
North? South? North?
Yeah.
Interesting. We will watch this space, as we will with all things Saudi Arabia. Now, we're not going to go into all of this in depth on this podcast because, for a number of reasons, David is probably about to keel over.
I have yawned about 12 times in 2 minutes.
We want to do the topic justice. We've touched on it lots before, but there's going to be lots more to say. I suspect there'll be more to say after Media Day tomorrow on this. And certainly there will be developments over the course of the tournament. It was confirmed today that the next-gen finals will be going to Jeddah in Saudi Arabia from November 8th to December 2nd. So that's obviously a change of location and a pushback in the calendar. It was reported by John Wertheim that there had originally been plans for this to be a combined men's and women's event, but the WTA backed out of that because the tournament were unprepared to make the necessary commitments regarding equal prize money and I think other aspects of equality. So it's just the men's next gen finals as it has been previously, and it is going to be staged in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. John Wertheim also reporting today that Saudi Arabia is going to be bidding or has been or has already bid to host the WTA finals this year. There he reports that there is also a bid from Prague, and he reports that there is a possible other bid backed in part by Todd Boehly, co-owner of the LA Dodgers baseball team and, of course, Chelsea Football Club in the UK. And that would be a bid from Washington, D.C. But again, this is all just reporting at this stage. There's going to be a board vote next week, and we will know, I think, soon after that, where the WTA finals will be headed for at the end of this year. But it does sound a distinct possibility that they will be headed for Jeddah. The last bit of reporting from John Wertheim on this today was a text he received from Martina Navratilova. He obviously had authorization to make this public. The text read, "I can tell you 100% if I was still playing, I would not be going to Saudi Arabia for the championships." Expect there to be more on this tomorrow after Media Day. And that is when we will be back with our next podcast. We will have that podcast for you as usual. We will also have a live show for you on Sunday, live from New York on YouTube. It won't also be available as a podcast. It will just be a live show. The exact timing is TBC, but I can tell you it will be Sunday afternoon US time, and we'll confirm the exact time for you tomorrow. So watch this space, and it'll be a Q&A show. So think up your questions, a US Open themed Q&A show where you can ask us, within moderated reason, anything you like about the 2 weeks of wonder that we have ahead of us. So we'll let you know the exact time for that tomorrow on our Media Day show. We have a mascot for today's show. That mascot is Willow. Willow is owned by Elizabeth, and we know Willow because Willow was our Wimbledon mascot last year, a King Charles Cavalier Spaniel, and we like those. Billie Jean is 50% Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, and they are just delightful dogs. So thank you, Willow. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thanks, Willow and Elizabeth.
Thank you to our mascots. David's got Maisie. I've got Xenia, and Matt has Darwin. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah, and Drew, and Matt. Make them quick, because David is actually going to fall asleep. We have shout-outs.
We start with Emma Bohill, who is in Ireland.
All right, Emma.
Like Emma Navarro.
Hey, well done, Catherine.
Daughter of another Navarro.
Ben Navarro.
Previously mentioned, yeah.
Emma says, "We watch Catherine on TV so often that my children call the prime button on the TV the tennis button.
Oh, I love that. Mm. Not for too much longer, but enjoy that while it lasts, Emma. Oh, that's lovely stuff. Thank you. Thanks for being a friend of the pod.
We've also got Laurie Porter, who grew up in Michigan but has lived in Wimbledon for 30 years.
Hello, Laurie.
Hello, Laurie.
How are we spelling Laurie?
L-A-U-R-I-E.
Laurie, were your parents Little Women fans, is my question. I hope so, because that would be a lovely thing to be named after. Thank you, Laurie.
Yeah, thanks, Laurie.
And finally, we have Luminita Vasilica.
Oh,
we've had Luminita before,
yes.
Unless there's two, but
I don't think so.
Luminita is in Montreal, but born in Romania.
That's a hell of a name you've got, Luminita. That is wonderful. I assume it means something to do with light, bringing light, which is
lovely.
Extremely lovely. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Luminita. David, thank you for
some
just
effort,
about staying
some
up.
Some effort, this.
I think you had a micro sleep during some of the John Isner segment. but basically a stunning effort
thank
from you.
Very you. Much.
And we've got to be up in about 8 hours, 7 hours, 6 hours, something like that, to get out to Flushing Meadows for the first time to grill your favourite tennis players on all things US Open. We can't wait, folks. We'll be back with another preview show tomorrow, and we'll speak to you then.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.